Good evening and welcome to this Friday's edition of Stockwatch. I'm Zinati Guma, and joining me to wrap this week up are Dale Hutchison from Absa Asset Management, Tamsang Laneta from Shiloh Capital, and Ricus Riedis from PSG Wealth Sandton. Thank you for joining us. A bit of a switch today. It feels like New Year's, even here at the office at Arena Holdings. It's our fiscal New Year, so it's kind of a celebratory mood, but is it a celebratory mood for markets? Dale, starting with you.
Well, it's been a tough first half. I mean, it's clear that rising inflation, you know, has put central banks under pressure to raise interest rates, and that's contributed significantly to markets coming under pressure. And, you know, we've obviously had complications from Russia invasion of Ukraine, etc. And yeah, sentiment generally out there has been somewhat depressed, I suppose.
Yeah. Tammy, it's the first day of the second half of 2022. Are you going into it with calm or caution or a bit of both?
I think a fruit salad, calm, caution, some risk appetite, some risk off. I think at this point you're trying to figure out which are the right stocks which maintain value that are going to have some form of predictable cash flows going forward. I think we also must acknowledge that it's not just simple inflation, it's quantitative easing. So basic economics, too much money chasing too few goods, and suddenly we are here where, as I remember, one Dr. Stiles wanted to do at some point, put interest rates at 25%. So I think we're going to be looking at a significantly strong and high interest rate environment. It will depend on how the Fed views recession probabilities, but I think we're going to have strong revaluations, especially in the technology sector, and those revaluations are much needed. Those valuations are getting out of hand, and I think we're going to get back to basic principles of investing. You trust management, you look at the product or services, the predictability of cash flow and growth in the future.
Ricus, on your side, how are you approaching the second half of the year? Are you bracing for the worst, or have you accepted the worst?
Well, you know, I was thinking about this, and I think we've got two problems. We've got a stock market problem, and we've got a global economic problem. The stock market problem, as Timmy just said, is basically far too much easy money for certain companies, specifically in the tech sector, that's grown used to it, and all of a sudden they're getting more expensive money to invest in things like R&D and what have you. And those specific companies are being hammered at the moment, and I agree with him. So one has to look to companies with a predictable cash flow, good management, and a bit of a track record. On the economic side, higher interest rates is not going to solve or was going to do very little to solve what is an economic problem, and that is supply, basically, whether it be supply constraints as a result of what's happening in the Ukraine, logistical problems, that kind of thing. It's not as if we are sitting with consumers that are spending wildly on goods, which would normally say, well, you've got to tighten interest rate to sort of cut back on that consumer spending. So in that sense, the two don't really follow each other. So from an investment basis, I think we fall back. And again, as Tumi said, what's got a strong balance sheet, good track records, and will probably, even if you're not going to make money during the next 6 or 12 months, at least provide some degree of capital protection.
Dale, on your side, I mean, Ricus and Tammy talk about how we're now going back to the basic principles of investing. Is that the same approach then that you would have for tech stocks? We know that they've been beaten down quite badly, but of course, it's because valuations were largely inflated. So do you wait for more downside? Because, I mean, we are sure to get more interest rate hikes in the second half of the year. Do you wait to go in there until there's significant downside or more downside? Or do you apply the basic principles of investing that, you know what, if it's a good company, don't waste your time trying to find a bottom?
Well, I think you need to apply the basic principles of, you know, understanding the business, obviously, you know, making sure those cash flows are there, and applying, you know, proper valuation techniques that aren't based on sales, etc. And as long as you're going about it in that fashion, there will be tech stocks that are great businesses that have, you know, real earnings, and those earnings are likely to grow over time, etc. And you'll probably want to buy them. But you're not going to want to buy them maybe based on historic multiples that the stocks are traded on, etc. You might want to look at a few other valuation methodologies that maybe, you know, aren't maybe inflated by historic multiples. So, you know, look at your DCF valuation, etc. So I agree, there is value in some of the tech names. Yes, I think you've got to be very selective. And unfortunately, when the whole space is selling off, I think you might find yourself averaging down from time to time. But I do think there are stocks that, you know, as this evolves, will prove to be great, great buyers for the long term.
All right. Still sticking to tech, we have a process and Aspers, obviously, that were the biggest news of the week on the JSE as they engage in corporate activity to try and narrow that discount that they are trading at. So there is a technical question from a viewer. With both Naspers and process shares, will both Naspers and process shares be repurchased with 10-cent sale proceeds? Tammy.
History says yes. Optimism says no. I think I'd prefer it if Prosus Naspers were going about the business of finding new assets to acquire, new business areas they believe are going to grow and sort of build out new industries. I've long held the view that they should let go of that 10-cent position. They should either sell it off or distribute it to shareholders and get back to the business of being internet and e-commerce investors. Go about finding the businesses that you've been finding before, invest in them and bring them to the market. I think as long as Bob Van Dyke's job is financial engineering so that the NAV gap closes, I think we lose focus on what the business is really supposed to be doing. The business is supposed to be finding the next 10 cent. And I think it's an important view for us shareholders to hold and to challenge management on, to say you should be moving towards finding the next big 10 cent elsewhere in the world, in some new e-commerce opportunity, rather than trying to close the NAV gap.
What do you think about then, Tammy, the current businesses that they have? Because there has been some concern from some analysts saying that, you know what they're doing now is they're just trying to water the weeds. Because, I mean, those companies are still loss-making. So what do you think of the current businesses that they have?
Well, as per normal, like current businesses, tech businesses are generally loss-making initially and then grow into profit making. It comes down to valuation. I also think as long as they have that big 10 cent slice, they are always going to be distracted and they're going to be trying to focus on valuation more than actually getting deals done. They had an opportunity to close a delivery deal which didn't go well, and there are other opportunities in the market that exist for an e-commerce investor who can specialize in emerging markets. So I think Tencent, I think Prosus and Naspers need to really have a deep look at their strategy. I think that Tencent asset is making them not go forward and go hard into other opportunities that could exist in the market, because it's a very sizable chunk. It allows them to hold a lot of value. And I think that distraction is part of the problem they're facing.
Rikus, this discount that they're trying to narrow, where is it standing right now and what would be a more comfortable level?
Gosh, I'm not sure about the exact number. Maybe Tommy and Dale can correct me, but I think it's about 20-30% at the moment. So possibly a little bit higher, but
Has anyone decided where a more comfortable level is?
Well, I think if you look at the Naspers discount process, there's an inherent tax liability that sits at a Naspers level that potentially you should capture in terms of a discount, and that somewhere probably sits somewhere closer to 20%. And one must argue that an appropriate holding company discount from a process to its underlying to the underlying assets is probably also appropriate, you know, probably 20-25%. So I guess that is important. I think for me, what's really changed with this whole thing is that, you know, Tencent is such a large component of the investment decision when it comes to Naspers and process that, you know, you had to be actually positive on Tencent before you even care about the rest of those assets. Mm-hmm. And unfortunately, if you continually saw a discount widening for certainly international investors or people who can choose to invest offshore, well, if you've drawn the conclusion that you like Tencent and you're not sure the discount is going to narrow, well, you might as well just buy Tencent and forget about buying Naspers and process. Mm. And therefore, the discount widens. With what they've gone and done and make an open-ended sort of buyback program and committing to sell Tencent shares to do this, you know, suddenly the narrative around the direction of that discount changes. And hence, I think we've seen this outperformance of Naspers and process in the interim. But I tend to agree a bit with, you know, in that the problem that Naspers and process has had is that, you know, I'd feel a lot better if I could have a straight investment in Tencent through one of those vehicles and the balance of the assets, you know, in another vehicle. And management, as was pointed out, can be focused on managing those businesses. Unfortunately, they're going about it now in this fashion, but it does mean some value is going to be realized for shareholders. So I am smiling. It's been a good week.
Rickus, quickly, before we go to break, we have about a minute. There's also a question on which is the better investment for the longer term between Prosus and Naspers. Which one would you be looking at?
At the moment, neither. I think there are better alternatives. I don't like the service, international service companies that are in. You are paying somebody, the driver, a very low price to go and grab your food and do your shopping. That's an unsustainable business model in the current global labor environment. Their costs are going to go up. I can't see them. They might make a profit, but it's never going to be a growth industry as far as I'm concerned. We've had it too easy for the past few years in that sector of the market.
Let's go into the South African economy. So it's the second half of the year, and more and more institutions are joining the choir of downgrading South Africa's economic outlook for this year. Yesterday, I spoke to PwC saying that they've revised down their 2022 GDP forecast from 2% to 1.6%. How much of an uphill could SA Inc. stocks face for the rest of the year, Tammy?
Look, I think it's going to be pressure all around. Unfortunately, we live in a world where a rising tide or a sinking tide drops all ships. I think we've got to look at and be honest and pragmatic about where South Africa is and make hard decisions. Unfortunately, hard decisions tend to be muddied by political ones. So eventually, the can gets kicked down the road on a lot of things we should have done 5-10 years ago. So I think South Africa has to just make hard decisions. And I think corporate South Africa, to a large degree, is quite healthy. I think if you look at the JSE Top 40, the cash reserves, you can see that there's some health there. However, there will be pain as consumers struggle more and more, and that will obviously spill into earnings and revenues. But I think fundamentally, we have to now make a set of very complex and difficult decisions, and we've got to do them and make them quickly. As we are now, we are rolling into stage 6 load shedding. It's one of those things where we've had this problem for over a decade and still hasn't been resolved. So at some point, we're going to have to make very difficult decisions. And I think we as SA Inc., we will eventually need to put our hands up. SA Corporate is beginning to do that. Here in Johannesburg, potholes are being covered by Discovery and Dial Direct. So, with their branding on them. So, there's a point where we've got to look at where we are as a state, where we are as a country, and I think make the tough decisions that need to be made to drive us towards growth and stop the continuous focus on whether or not we are downgraded or further. Let's fix things. Mm.
Dale, you know, the typical South African household spends almost half their salary on food and fuel. And I'm just thinking that the companies that are selling stuff to consumers are really going to have it tough. So you have this pie, which is the economy, and it's shrinking. So they'll be fighting for market share. I'm wondering what tricks then retailers will have up their sleeves to kind of fight for market share gains in such a challenging environment.
Well, I think they tend to negotiate very hard with the food producers and tend to push back on price increases. So they try and prevent some of that inflation flowing through to the consumer. I don't think they can do it entirely, but certainly that's why I prefer food retail over food producers in an environment like this for the moment. Obviously, consumers are going to be down trading as well. So, you know, if you can position yourself for that down trading, if you can offer, you know, no-name brand type of products, etc., private label at least, you can perhaps capture market share, and it's going to be a fight for market share, you know, a lot of the time. Yeah. So I think that's how a lot of the retailers are going to probably end up responding. And obviously focus on efficiencies to try and take out costs where they can.
I'm glad that you mentioned the food producers. So that relationship between the producers and the retailers should be quite interesting. As you've said, Dale, the retailers are trying to negotiate hard with the producers. Rikus, you know, producers also dealing with their own price pressures. We had producer price inflation yesterday for May coming in at 14.7%. That inflation has been at double digits for 6 months in a row. So which producers will have or are having a more difficult time with this inflation?
Gosh, I think almost all of them. you know, it's the degree to which are struggling. So obviously we've got, you know, just stop from here, we've got Rhodes Food and we've got Tiger Brands and Anglival Industries as well as Lipstar. So they all have their own separate issues, if I can call it that, whether it be Tiger Brands with a perception of weak management, AVI on the other hand, good management, but the same problems universally. So they were lagging even before COVID, even before the war. And they will continue to lag until such time as, by hook or by crook, we start turning this economy around, which will only happen when, you know, as Winston Churchill said, a politician will do the wrong thing until he finally is forced to do the right thing. So with load shedding going on, with the extraneous global pressures going on, I think, unfortunately, it's not going to happen overnight or in the next 6 months or in the next 12 months. So we're in for a very bad time, I think, as far as consumer discretionary is concerned, whether it be clothing, whether it be retail. And you can also see it in the price graphs themselves. There's no sign of a turnaround as far as I can see.
Let's go into commodities. Merafe yesterday had a ferrochrome price announcement for the third quarter of 2022. So the benchmark price settled at 180 US cents per that's a 16.7% decrease from the second quarter. There's a comment actually from a viewer. The ferrochrome 16.7% price drop back to 180 cents for the third quarter of 2022 is still way above the average price of 168 cents for the 6 months ended December 21, where they produced an incredible 43 cents HEPS. Just a matter of interest, the average price for the current 6 months to June 22 interim period was 198 cents. So if things go okay, it could be an incredible 6 month result. So, Tammy, would you say that Merafe is on the right track? Is it a counter that you look at?
I think no, we don't look at it largely because Glencore is a significant shareholder. So, to some degree, it's a subsidiary or an associate, rather, to be more specific, of Glencore. And I think they benefit largely from the infrastructure around Glencore in moving around ferrochrome. So, I think in terms of can the business continue to have an opportunity to make money, especially with this kind of commodity? Yes, they've got a significant big brother. But as an investor, you now know that the big brother determines everything. So if your interests are not aligned with Glencore's interests, whatever they may be, so if they decide they want to take out all the cash and declare it as dividends, if they decide to explore and go further into other projects.
Tabby's probably got load shedding there. We seem to be having a network issue. Oh dear. Rickersdale, do any of you look at Merafe?
I don't specifically look at Merafe, but I'll make one broad comment about commodities in this market. You know, if the world's worried about recession risks, etc., what you're probably finding is people choosing to exit their commodity positions in anticipation or further falls in the underlying commodity prices.
Hmm.
We, however, do sit with a situation that, will China aggressively stimulate as we move into the second half of the year?
Hmm.
And that could upend a very cautious commodity view that one, I think, should have at this point in time, given the global growth backdrop that one looks at. But there is a switch that could shift the dynamics.
Hmm. All right. Let's go into more questions. We have Telkom. View on Telkom following a massive correction. Results weren't impressive. Is the bad news priced in, and could this provide a decent entry at a PE of 6, or can we expect more downside? Rickus, your thoughts on Telkom?
Certainly from the local sort of Telkom's provider, certainly not my favorite. I think they are sitting with developmental issues, if I can call it that. Obviously, we all know about their fixed line business basically coming to an end, I would imagine, that they have to gain market share against the likes of Vodacom and MTN. They're the third player in that market, and that's never a good position to be in.
Yeah.
So over the years, they've done a lot to correct the business. But is it competitive enough to outperform the likes of Vodacom and MTN? I don't believe so.
I wonder if that share price hasn't reached a floor or is not maybe close to a floor, because now they did say during their results presentation that they will be moving, with their corporate action, Swiftnet, separately listing Swiftnet, also thinking about OpenServe and also finding an equity, a strategic partner for BCX. Dale, do you not think that we could see more upside for Telkom?
I mean, certainly I think the investment case is premised on a realization of value with those corporate action, potential corporate actions.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, obviously, I think timelines have been extended on those. And when the market looked at these most recent results, the market was, I think, very disappointed with the free cash flow performance of the business and concerned about that. So to the extent that the market conditions improve so that they can actually advance some of those corporate actions, yes, I suspect the share could have some outperformance in it. But while the market is obviously selling off and coming under pressure, it's very unlikely you're going to engage in some of those corporate actions. And, if operationally the business is facing headwinds in several areas, it probably remains under pressure, even though I think on principle it probably does look attractive.
Yeah. All right. We did lose Tami there. Of course, network issues due to load shedding. So it's great that we had three of you initially. Rickus, your stock pick for tonight.
Tumi was talking and we were talking about a strong balance sheet and cash flow and that kind of thing going into these uncertain times. Udeco had their results yesterday. Now, they are basically on sellers of any kind of industrial equipment, whether it be automotive or electronic or in manufacturing that you can think of. Both their revenue and their income and cash flow is even better than pre-COVID. So they've weathered the various storms very well. So turnover up, margins up, cash flow up. I like that in the company. Very, very well run. And rather than discretionary, the things that they sell are basically essential. In other words, if you can't buy a new truck, you've got to fix it. And you're going to go to your Udeco to go and get your spares.
Mm. All right. And on your side, Dale, your stock pick?
My stock pick today will be BTI. Again, focusing on maybe a slightly more defensive play, being British American Tobacco. Clearly, there are some risks around the world in terms of pressure on consumers, but they still seem to have pricing power. Their guidance hasn't been changed significantly at all, still showing growth expecting growth in the year ahead. They're still on a relatively attractive dividend yield of over 6% and a forward PE of just under 10%. I think it's a safe place to be parking some money.
All right. Well, thank you very much, gentlemen, for your time. And thank you to Tami, who we did lose in the middle of the interview. But thank you very much for going through what the viewers have been asking about. Thanks. That's Stockwatch this week. Thanks to my guests, Dale Hutchison from Absa Asset Management, Rikus Reuters from PSG Wealth Santon, and Tamsan Nganeta from Shiloh Capital. From me, Zanati Puma, and the rest of the team, have a great weekend. We'll be right back.